If your men fail to capture him at the gate, then at midnight we bolt all doors and darken the entire house. His face and hands will appear like phosphorus, regardless of any disguise.
And if he touches anyone?
They die.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville, Elitist Bastards Go to the Movies, starring Ken Hanke, film reviewer for the Mountain Express, and Justin Souther, film reviewer for the Mountain Express.
Bastards both. So, see any movies this week?
Yes.
Well, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
What did you watch? Was it better? That was worse.
No. Well, one of them was better and one of them was worse.
Okay. Why don't you start with the better one?
Well, the better one is Queen to Play, which actually opens this Friday, which is a French film about female empowerment, and it's not done in any sort of way that is annoying or stupid. It is about this woman, this working-class woman on Corsica, who learns how to play chess with the help of Kevin Klein as an expatriate American widower living in Corsica. And yes, Kevin Klein speaks French in the entire film, except for a brief scene where he quotes William Blake's The Tiger. And the film is charming, it's witty, it's sophisticated, and it's almost constantly surprising. And you'll be relieved to know that although Jennifer Beals is in the film, she says very little in French or English. And in fact, she's more of a presence than she is a character. She just is the American woman whom Sandrine Bonnaire sees play chess that gets her interested in taking up the game. But really, it's probably just the most pleasant film I've seen in a while. So I definitely recommend you should see this film. You want to talk about Horrible Bosses, or do you want me to talk about Zookeeper first?
I can
first?
Talk about Horrible Bosses.
Why don't you talk about Horrible Bosses, which is a movie that you saw this week, and apparently it wasn't horrible.
No. I was entertained. Though I realized today I'm already forgetting parts of it, which is not a good sign.
No.
Maybe I have mad cow disease or something. It's possible.
I've often suspected it, but didn't want to bring it up.
Thank you.
Okay. So, tell us about this movie you can't remember, except that it was entertaining.
Well, it's about these guys who have horrible bosses, hence the title.
Horrible Bosses,
yes. And they decide...
Truth in Advertising.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And they decide that the only way, since the economy is so bad, and one of them is a registered sex offender because he peed in a children's playground at night. There weren't any children there, but he's nevertheless registered. Since they can't find better jobs, that their only option is to kill their bosses. And they go about this quite ineptly. And that's the bulk of the movie. There's way too much setup. But once they get into the actual, like, trying to plan these crimes, pretty much the point when Jamie Foxx shows up as their murder consultant,
they find him. Does he like advertise as a murder consultant or what?
Well, they're trying to find somebody. They're trying to find a hitman. They start off by putting an ad out on Craigslist, and it only ends up with the guy from the Fantastic Four movies coming, who actually turns out that his job is he pees on men for a living. Bit of a mix-up there. Well, they basically just go to they just find a bar in the worst part of town and start asking the bartender for a hitman, and they end up with Jamie Foxx. Who turns out not to be quite what he seems. But I'll leave that to the film.
Okay.
I guess. Nevertheless.
And how horrible are these bosses?
they're pretty awful. If you actually worked for them, especially Kevin Spacey's sort of sociopathic.
Well, that kind of describes my impression of Kevin Spacey. Yes.
So I mean, they make them so awful that it's.
You're perfectly happy to entertain the idea of them meeting their demise.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's fair.
And so there's a good, most of the movies predicated on them, like, just screwing up and not really being the kind of guys that are murderers, but it's all agreeable. The cast is really, it's one of those movies where you can tell everyone's having fun, but it actually translates into the movie being good. It's not just that, you can actually have some fun too.
Yeah. Not just a bunch of people who are like hanging out together and swapping inside jokes that are lost on most of the civilized world.
So, I enjoyed it. It's better than The Hangover. I didn't see Bridesmaids, but it's at least shorter.
Okay.
So, there's that.
Okay. That brings us to
Zookeeper.
Don't. Just don't.
But what's it about, Ken? Is it about a zookeeper?
Yes, it's about a zookeeper. It's about a zookeeper played by Kevin James. It's about a zookeeper who doesn't realize that he's got Rosario Dawson hot for him over here because he's still all wild about Leslie Bibb, who dumped him 5 years earlier, but who now is flirting with him again. And he's getting romantic advice from talking animals. Do you really need to know any more than this?
I am very curious about the part that you talked about in the review, where you said that the best part was Nick Nolte's gorilla.
Well, Nick Nolte's gorilla is indeed the best part of the film. The thing is that some of this stuff...
It's not Nick Nolte in a gorilla suit, though.
No, it is not. But it is, in many cases, a person in a gorilla suit.
Okay.
Augmented with CGI. But this does at least make the gorilla appear solid.
Okay.
And the thing is that there's a kind of a pleasant relationship between James and Nick Nolte that doesn't really exist anywhere else in the movie. The gorilla was abused one time by Donnie Wahlberg, who looks like your pathological gorilla abuser to me. And
a weedy mustache.
Yes. The gorilla or Donnie Wahlberg?
Donnie Wahlberg,
yes. And the thing about
gorillas have full mustaches.
That's right. No, they don't have any mustaches at all.
But if they did, they'd be full.
I think they would have Fu Manchus. Yes. That's what I think. Anyway.
We'll never know.
We'll get a gorilla and we'll see.
With a mustache.
You could probably talk him into growing one.
Maybe.
Anyway. Now, he can not only spell. Apparently, they can all do this. This is a little bit dicey. He apparently can also read, because he used to have an animal compound where he could see outside the wall, and his big thing in life is to find out whether or not TGI Fridays is really as awesome as it looks. And of course, this is going to lead to an outing to TGI Fridays, where he's presented as being someone who went to a costume party, and that it's hard to take the suit off. They don't question the fact that he can lift 6 people or eat 20 oranges, but he becomes the hit of TGI Fridays.
It smells
like a gorilla, which I suspect he does. But that's a sweet aspect of the film. The relationship with Rosario Dawson is also okay, but overall the movie just doesn't work very well. It isn't terribly funny. I mean, you know, the idea of Sylvester Stallone and Cher as a pair of lions might sound kind of amusing, but they don't give them anything funny to say. And so it just kind of lays there. It's still better than Maya Rudolph as a giraffe, because her part is just... The word embarrassing, it's like Maya Rudolph doing a Tyler Perry impression. It is not good. It is not good. And the whole film is not good. Don't see this movie. Unless you have small, rather backward children.
Or getting paid to see it.
Or getting paid. Tell me what's something the about the Thursday Horror Picture Show.
What do you want to know, Kim?
Well, where is it, for starters?
It's at the Carolina, Asheville.
And where in the Carolina?
In the Cinema Lounge.
In the Cinema Lounge, aha.
When? What day?
When? What Thursday, day is the obviously. Thursday Horror Picture Show?
Yes.
Oh, I bet it's on Thursday. At don't 8. You? I do, yeah. It's at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And this week's big feature is the third Karloff and Lugosi teaming, The Invisible Ray, which is one of the last films made by Universal when they were the original Universal, before they became New Universal the next year, or more correctly, what it is the next to last horror film made before the Lamleys lost the studio to Standard Capital. And, you know, I just kind of get short shrift because it's kind of halfway science fiction and halfway horror. But it's really more horror than science fiction. And it starts out in the Carpathian Mountains. The film is a real globetrotter. It starts in the Carpathian Mountains, and it's got to get about 20 minutes there. Then you got about another 30 minutes in darkest Africa with natives that are like they're out of a Tarzan movie, unfortunately. And then you've got a climax that takes place in France, in Paris, or, you know, in stock shots of Paris and Universal's various village studio sets. But it works. It works more often than it doesn't. It's a good teaming for Karloff and Lugosi. It is, of course, become somewhat famous because it's the film that gets mentioned in Ed Wood. It's the film that the actor, whose name I forget, who plays Conrad Brooks, mistakenly refers to as telling Martin Landau's Bela Lugosi that he was great in Invisible Ray as Karloff's sidekick, which goes down with Lugosi about as well as you would imagine and results in a blast of extreme obscenity directed at Conrad Brooks for having mentioned Karloff at all, but much less that he was Karloff's sidekick. It's good, it's fun, it's not one of the really great films, but it's better than is usually given credit to be. People think it's a bigger production than it is because they don't really understand glass shots. And if you don't know what a glass shot is the set's only finished up to a little above the actors' heads, and the rest of the set is painted on glass and fitted in front of the camera so that it appears that there is this full vaulted ceiling that doesn't actually exist. But it works. It's nice. Pleasant. Pleasant movie.
Well, it's on Tuesday at the Lounge in the Carolina Asheville.
But nothing about Asheville Film Society just screams Tuesday like
well,
Tuesday.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
If you give me a second.
All right. Well, let me quick here.
Tuesday at 8.
Yeah, at 8. Please.
Not 9. If you got here at 9,
you're screwed.
Annoyed.
Although you might, you know, there might still be seats, or you might
people
have,
might
there might
have
be
left.
New seats, you know, by then, because this is probably the most outrageous film that the Asheville Film Society has ever shown. This is Peter Greenaway's Prospero's Books, and it is his take on Shakespeare, in which John Gielgud more or less is writing the play and is doing all the voices. It's largely a series of set pieces, spectacle, magic. It's about writing, it's about Shakespeare, it's about filmmaking. It's about matching really elaborate, colorful, bright, intriguing imagery with Michael Nyman's score, and it appears to be about getting as many people to take their clothes off as is humanly possible. I've actually thought that this movie should be called Willie's a Poppin'. And I realize it's an easier situation in Europe, but I just have this fantasy of a casting call for naked, uncircumcised men on this film. But it's not like anything you've ever seen. And it's actually, it has some emotional resonance, which probably comes from Shakespeare and not from Peter Greenaway, who is not the most emotionally resonant filmmaker on the face of the earth. It came and had a sort of theatrical release through Miramax because it was right after that brief period of him having a pop culture status because of The Cook, The Thief, his wife, and her lover, which made a certain amount of impression on something other than art house audiences. This, trust me, did not, and I am really anticipating some serious walkouts on this one. Don't let me down, folks. We got Trekkers this week.
Well, Queen to Play, which...
which we already know about, yes. And Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
And the Deathly Hallows, part deux. And I suspect that...
it'll make a lot of money.
It'll make a lot of money, and really, it doesn't need me to say anything about it. You know what it is. You know whether you're going to go see it.
How do you feel about the end of the Harry Potter series, though, both of you, the film series finally coming to an end? Because it is sort of this cultural era.
Well, it is. It's sort of a cultural touchstone, and I don't really care. You know, you can hate the movies. You can never have seen the movies and hate them at the same time, which is an interesting thing to do. But it's impossible to not realize that these things are very much a part of 21st century culture. And, you know, the movies have been going on since 2001 now. And it's almost hard to remember a time when there weren't Harry Potter movies. So it's a little bit
Believe it or not, there was.
Yeah, well, you know, I realize...
Nostradamus predicted Harry Potter.
That's true. But, you know, I mean, I went 46 years without seeing a Harry Potter movie. And when I saw the first one, I knew almost nothing about it. I went with a group of people, and there was a 17-year-old sitting with me who... he was jacked. He had been waiting for this. And he fell asleep with his head on my shoulder, oddly enough, at about, I don't know, the three-quarter mark. So I think he was let down.
I never saw the first two, but I do remember working in a movie theater a few months before the second one came out and thinking about how I wanted to get a better job before that wasn't at a movie theater before Harry Potter came out. Let me see how that worked.
Did you ever have, and to me this was like one of the great, great experiences, someone buying a kiddie combo, and it was Harry Potter cup and a Harry Potter box, and it was obviously someone of the fundamentalist nature, and the kid was just freaking out that, I can't have this, this is Harry Potter, and his mother's going, just cause we're doing this doesn't mean we support this movie. It was. I enjoyed that. That was sort of a primo experience. I don't remember which one that was over.
It must have been the first one.
Could be.
I don't remember. No.
Maybe first or second. I mean, I would definitely probably not have been downstairs to witness it by the third one. So. And Winnie the Pooh. Which.
And Winnie the Pooh.
I don't care one way or the other. No, and the and Beginners with Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer opens at the Fine Arts, which I do care about seeing. I'm not, like, over the moon about it, but I'm interested in seeing it. I liked Mike Mills' first film and his last film, Thumbsucker. I liked it a good deal, but it's not something that has actually, you know, stayed with me to the degree where I've been just waiting for Mike Mills' next film. But here it is, and I'm certainly glad enough to have it.
You have any thoughts on it?
No.
Shrugs don't really work well in a sound recording.
We need the shrug sound effect.
No.
Man, it's the best
not that,
answer.
No. Where's my tippy cow?
Oh, I forgot it.
Yeah, you're right. You've forgotten my tippy cow for months now. I want a tippy cow.
Okay, well, let's sign this off.
We're done.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think so. In any case, I'm Ken Hankey from the Mount Express, and... you are...
I'm Justin Sowler, also from the Mount Express.
Yes, that's true. And they are the fine folks who allow us to do this.
I didn't just call him Ken the Hank Hankey, which I think he would warm up to if in your mind, you imagine Sir Guy Grand saying it?
When you can do a Peter Sellers as Sir Guy Grand impression,
I'll
you can start it. Saying it.
I'll work on it. I'll see.
I'd pay good money to see him do a voice impression.
Until then.
Even to try doing a voice impression. Anyway.
Maybe I can find somebody.
We are still.
Can do a good Peter Sellers.
The fine. No, it's got to be you.
I'll record it and you won't know.
Nah, I've got to see it. The fine folks at the Mountain Express who make this possible and indeed provide us with none other than Miami Steve Schoenfeld, the production whiz who coheres all this rambling into something, yes, vaguely understandable by the rest of the world. Amazing, is it not?
Sure.
There.